I'm Rena Nine and a CBSN anchor. Walmart is working to uncover ideas that'll transform the future of shopping through a new incubator. It's called Store Number 8. Jet Black is the largest company rolled out by Store Number 8. It's a membership-based service, and it's slowly rolling out in New York City. It's really aimed at busy parents. And members can send a text with nearly any shopping request, and Jet Black will find the product and deliver it right to their door. Our guest is Katie Finnegan. She's leading Store Number 8's efforts right now. Katie, thank you very much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
So I'm just kind of curious. I think it might be interesting for people who haven't heard about this innovation before. Exactly what's behind it? I don't think of Walmart and putting these two concepts together.
Yeah, no, this is definitely part of a new era for Walmart, I would say. You know, since the beginning, actually, if you read the history of Walmart, Walmart was the original innovator of the mass retailing movement. And that was about 40 years ago or so. And so they've been really very successful in a lot of that innovation. But I think the leadership has realized now that we're on a new frontier. And so one of the key initiatives where there's many with innovation is this concept called Store Number 8 that we set up, which is it's a separate LLC. It's wholly owned by Walmart, but it allows us to really think differently. And so what that means is we can have the core team, the day-to-day enterprise team focusing on the P&L, focusing on the bottom line and what shareholders want to see. But then the Store Number 8 team can look at what's to come down the horizon, 5 to 10 to 15 years from now, so we can parallel path on both. And oftentimes you find with large companies, it's very hard to do both simultaneously.
So what is coming down the pipelines when you talk about the retail experience and innovation?
Yeah, I think in summary, and I can go in deep in it, but I think holistically, what really excites me about technology is it's not technology for technology's sake. And I think that's some of the bad rap that you hear sometimes in the marketplace. But for me, it's how do you leverage this technology to really right size the relationship with consumers and retailers and brands? And so by that, I mean, how do you use technology in a way that allows customers to spend more time on the stuff that they love doing? So there's certain products they shop for that is actually fun. It's engaging. And those products might be different for me than they are for you. But there's other products where there just needs to be convenience. And there's, while friction has been reduced with digitization, I think there's a lot more friction to go. And so I'm excited about leveraging technology to really optimize that relationship so consumers are spending time where they want to and basically have that other time back to spend with family, work, whatever's important to them.
So explain to me exactly what Store Number 8 is. Now, there's a $50 a month. It's only available in New York City right now, $50 a month. I'm thinking, oh my gosh, I barely pay my, $100 a year for the Amazon subscription. Are people really going to pay that?
Yeah. So just to clarify though, Store Number 8 is basically the holding company. So Store Number 8, in some ways, the easiest way to think about it is almost like a corporate venture capital arm where we set up each of these companies. Mm-hmm. And so the first company we set up was Jet Black. We hired Jenny Fleiss, the co-founder of Rent the Runway, to run that company. And that's, I think, the one you're talking about.
$50
$50 a year. Uh-huh. And it's interesting. I mean, it's definitely aimed towards a high net worth, busy mom in New York City. And so that's where that price point resonates.
Sorry, is it $50 a year or $50 a month?
Oh, $50 a month. Did
a
I
month.
Say year?
Yes.
Oh, sorry.
Okay.
Yes. $50 a year. But what we're finding is the amount of friction that's reducing. And I can take you through some of my text messages because I use it all the time. You can just literally take a picture of something. You don't even have to describe it and just say, get this. And they can use computer vision and other technologies to actually figure out what that item is and match it to you. And then because they have all of your shipping preferences, if you say, I need this for my daughter, they know how old your daughter is, what size your daughter is, and they can just auto ship it to you. And so while that seems like a high bar, I think you're comparing it to other things that are in the marketplace. But I would almost say those are unfair comparison. This is almost like having a personal shopper or personal assistant at your beck and call. And that for $50 a month is a pretty good deal, I'd say.
Because right now on Amazon, I can't take a picture of Swiffer wet wipes and have them delivered right away to my door.
Yeah, there's definitely tests with those types of things, but you'd have to take the perfect picture at the perfect angle. Mm-hmm. And this allows you to really do it, I would say, more mirroring what real consumer behavior is like. I might take the picture in a dark place where there's shadows, but we can still figure that out. And that's that extra layer, that 5% of friction, I think is really what makes the consumer adoption and taking pictures in some of these other apps that have that feature. It doesn't happen if it doesn't have to be perfect. So it has to be really, really seamless. Mm-hmm. And what our technology from a concierge perspective allows you to do is if our matching algorithms or our technology can't do it automatically, we will then flip it over to a human in the loop to look at it. So regardless, from a consumer's perspective, we never bother you with that issue. We figure it out on the back end and just come to you with a solution.
So this JetBlack service, $50 a month, personal shopper, as you put it, do you feel like there's really a big market for that right now?
Yeah, and I think we're finding there's a few different cohorts of items, and this is what I was alluding to a little bit with right-sizing the relationship. There's items that are just everyday items that you need to have, right? I need new onesies for my daughter. I need diapers. You know, my daughter's growing, and now she's crawling, so figure out what type of diaper I need for that. That, I think there's still a lot of friction in the market. It's definitely decreased over the last 10 or so years with, you know, the e-commerce revolution, but you still have to go online, you still have to search it, you still have to filter, you have to add to cart. It's probably, you know, 10 to 15 steps, whereas now it's one. And then ultimately at some point it could become zero, where we start understanding your consumption behaviors and we can actually get ahead of you. And then I think on the other side where it's really valuable is for gifting, so getting recommendations. And so what's really interesting that we found is we start to learn a lot about these consumers' personas. So when you say, I need a gift for a housewarming party, you don't have to go too detailed into, you know, who that person is you need that gift for, what price point. We know from past behavior that you're likely going to land here. And that's what we're trying to prove, is we believe that in the future with IoT and connected devices, people are going to start shopping via voice. And if you can anticipate shopping via voice versus your eyes, you're probably only going to be able to speak about three recommendations. Whereas on a website, you can have 12 images show up, and that's, you know, no difference to the consumer. And so as a result, we need to get a lot better at recommending items to you in more precision, faster, so we don't lose your engagement and your interest in what we're talking about.
Do you see JetBlack rolling out beyond New York City anytime soon?
I would say probably not anytime soon. I think what we're really interested in is being laser focused on a demographic and really nailing the product market fit. And I think this is a really important point as to why we created Store Number 8, was while it's very fortunate to be part of a Fortune 1 retailer and have the backing of a Fortune 1 retailer, with that sometimes comes a lot of complexity. And so Walmart serves 160 or so million Americans every week. And so if we were to roll that out or even start consider that type of scale too early, we actually might sort of, as we say, hug ourselves to death. And so what we want to do is really nail that product market fit and nail that market first, really deep, before starting increasing complexity and expanding. And by having a separate company that sits outside the broader enterprise, we're allowed to have that type of rollout timeline.
You were talking a little bit about artificial intelligence and shopping. How do you see that transforming the retail industry?
Yeah, I think it's a very interesting topic. And you hear a lot of people say, you know, customers aren't going to give up their data. They're not going to want to, you know, have those privacy concerns. But quite honestly, in just a ton of research and I think in reality, what you see is once that benefit is perceived by the customer. So, oh my God, all this friction is reduced. I don't have to worry about this on my to-do list. It's taken care of. Or you know me so well, I don't have to keep following up and asking refining questions. Consumers are overwhelmingly more interested in giving up their data when they find that value. And so I think the conversation right now is it's only one-sided, right? Yeah, I'm not going to give up my data for no perceived value. But once I get that value and you make it seamless, you make it consistent, and you make it automatic, you're more open to giving up that data because you need to have that balance of that relationship.
When you talk about Walmart, you're talking about all this innovation. I always think of Walmart as a place where I go to get my cleaning supplies, my basic essentials, maybe that box of brownie mix. But how do you see the company transforming as they start, Store Number 8 and little incubators associated with it?
Yeah, I think you'll see this just holistically. You know, Walmart is very good at selling those things. You can see it from the footprint of the store. You know, I don't know this number offhand, but it's probably around 60 or so percent of the square footage goes to those types of items. But there's all the other items we sell in categories like outdoor, fashion, home. And I think what e-commerce and really the digital side of things over the last 10 years have really allowed places like Walmart and other mass retailers is to expand that side of the assortment. So traditionally, it was really just a footprint issue. So I only have this much space for fashion, so I'm just going to do basics, or I'll do some things, but I'm not going to be known for it. And now with the endless aisle per se, and we can talk about virtual reality and other parts of the digital side of things that even heighten that, you can now take all of the deep subject matter expertise you have in retail and apply it to all categories in sort of a fair way. Whereas before, we sort of had to pick where we were going to lean in, and those categories you were mentioning are traditionally the traffic drivers. But now we don't have to. We can be great at that, but we can also be great at the other side of the barbell, as retailers say it, and And quite honestly, when you think about that from a business perspective, the margin profiles of those two types of categories are very different. And so from a business perspective, it's interesting for us to not only serve our full customers' needs end to end, but also balance out our margins so that we, with higher margin items, you could sell other sort of consumables or other margin items at lower price points and be more competitive.
When you talk about VR, virtual reality, how do you think it'll transform our shopping experience?
Yeah, I'm very personally excited about virtual reality and where I see that playing. So when I talked about Jet Black, it's about, you know, sort of everyday items, just removing all friction. And then it's about recommendations. And I think on the recommendation side of things, but then also on what we're calling experiential retail. So this is everything from buying a tent to a kayak, all those other items I was really just talking about, where traditionally mass players don't do well in those items. And I think the reason is because there's either a lot of education, a lot of discovery, or really just, you know, experiential experimenting that needs to happen with the consumer to feel informed in that decision and pull the trigger. And traditionally, you didn't have the square footage or, you know, the deep subject matter expertise in your associates to provide that to you. And so what VR does, it is allows you to really have that deep immersive experience akin to what, you know, the best in class specialty player would have for selling that tent. And then not only then bring that to you in a digital way, but then actually allow you to do things you could never do in the physical world. So, for example, in that tent experience, not only could you bring an expert in, so you have like a deep personal conversation as to why this wind flap is the best for that type of weather, but then you can actually simulate that tent in the real world environment where you're going to use it. So in Yosemite, and see how that tent would work.
Wow.
And so for me, that's really exciting because it opens up a whole new era of what's possible with these experiential goods. And back to what I was saying earlier, My thesis is that's where people want to be spending their time. And so it allows them to get deeper and have more fun doing it.
You've worked at J. Crew before. How do you feel your previous experiences have helped what you're doing now?
Yeah, J. Crew was one of my first jobs out of undergrad. And I worked directly for Mickey Drexler, as many in the retail world know, the merchant prince, as he was called. It really laid, I feel very fortunate because it laid a very strong foundation from a merchant side of things. And so, yes, now I'm sort of in the retail tech space and I definitely spend most of my time talking about technology and how that's going to disrupt the customer experience. But at the end of the day, I have Mickey in the back of my head always saying, you know, what would the customer want? And I think that's really important. And that gets to what I was saying earlier about tech for tech's sake is you got to always take yourself back and say, will the consumer use this and will this drive a change in their behavior? Because sometimes there's something that's cool, but the consumer's not ready for it. And so it doesn't make sense to kind of push that agenda forward.
So if you're taking us forward 5 years from now, give us a sense of where you see technology merging with retail in an experience or a way that we might not be able to quite visualize today.
Yeah, I would say 5, maybe 10 years, because some of this stuff takes a long time to sort of turn over. So more probably the 7 or so year time horizon. But for me, physical retail still exists. There is a key point in the consumer experience, and I feel strongly. I think the role that the physical retail will play is going to be fundamentally different. So things like these sort of consumable goods that drive traffic, as I was talking, more and more with AI and computer vision and other tracking mechanisms that understand consumption, those things are going to be auto-reordered and auto-fulfilled in the customer's home. And so what that means is a lot of square footage is going to open up for experiential items. And so traditionally where you had, you know, a tent aisle or a fishing aisle or whatever you want to call it, you know, constrained to, you know, a few different parts of the modular, you can have a whole theatrical experience where you're actually demoing things in real time. And whether you're using technology to do it in virtual reality or there's actually a physical setup, I think it's going to be a nice hybrid and combination of both. But for me, those physical footprints turn more into an activity than sort of a chore you have to do every weekend.
Speak of chore, I just hate having to go grocery shopping every weekend and getting stuff for the lunchbox and for dinner. I mean, how can we transform? I almost wish my refrigerator would just restock itself.
Well, that's not out of the realm of possibility in the future, I would say. I know, again, that sort of scares some people to think about it. But once you get the benefit of it, I think you'll be really happy that you never run out of milk for your morning coffee. But you know, that's maybe a little bit further out. But until then, I mean, honestly, the Walmart click and collect and auto reorder that's happened with grocery and we're expanding nationally has been an amazing consumer response. So, you know, it's just you place your order online and then either we can deliver it via a delivery partner or you just pick, you just roll up and we just put it in the back of your trunk. You never have to get out of your car. Mm-hmm. And so, yes, you still have to go to the store, but it's like an extremely frictionless experience. And that's really transformed. And that's where you can get something sort of in more near term transformation. And then in the future, hopefully your refrigerator will be auto reordering and you never have to even be part of that equation.
I really look forward to that day as a mom of two, I have to say. You know, as before you go, Katie, I just wanted to get your sense. What do you think has been just over the past 10 years in retail, the biggest transformation that has really impacted the market the most?
Yeah, so I'll say something more from a cultural perspective, and then I can talk about like a tactical. I think what I've really recognized in the last, call it 3 to 4 years, quite honestly, and more so in the last, you know, even 18 months, is traditional retailers have recognized the need to really understand this digital side of things, or not necessarily understand, but welcome it. And so traditionally, e-commerce is, you know, anywhere from 6 to 15% of someone's GMV. And so it hadn't been enough to really tip the scale. And again, I don't think it's ever going to be 100%. But what I'm finding is very, very traditional players that have been sort of maybe scared or just not ready to accept that as a reality, have really started to lean in and create roles like chief digital officer and have that person not report, you know, into multiple layers into the CEO, but they actually have a direct seat at the table. And so for me, I think that's what's been hindering retail for the last, you know, 7 or 8 years prior to that is people weren't willing to accept that. And so there was a lot of friction. But now what I'm really excited about is seeing from a strategic lens, CEOs make this a strategic role and actually have a seat at the table and part of the overall company vision. I think from a consumer perspective, we're going to see change at a much faster rate than we have, you know, the 10 previous years preceding. And I think the markets are showing that, too. You know, if you're not willing to do that, you probably don't have that long of a leash or that much time because the consumer expectations are changing rapidly and you have to be willing to sort of adjust with those and be at the forefront of that.
Katie Finnegan, the new initiative by Walmart is called Store Number 8. Best of luck to you, Katie. Thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me.